This is a Spirit of Truth Radio Arts original program in partnership with Salt and Light Catholic Radio.
Being a contributor to Salt and Light Radio has opened me up to meet some great people. My guest today is someone I am proud to call a colleague, as he too contributes to the Morning Light Morning Show. Eric Meyer is the author of the book, The Catholic Company Man. His book struck a chord with me because it is about finding the on-ramp to faith. No matter where you are along the way, you may be called to provide that on-ramp of faith to someone and point them towards Aquinas. This casual conversation is about starting simply and even has some advice on where to start. Now, Eric Meyer. Eric, welcome.
Thanks, Dave. Nice to be here. I appreciate you having me on today.
It is it's finally good to see you, because this is, like, I think the third attempt, third time is a charm, and I think we got to get something out of the way that you and I are both content contributors to the Salt and Light Catholic Radio, that beacon of light out on the Boise bench. You were on today, which is Monday. I'm on Wednesdays, but Brian Howell keeps us both going, and we really do appreciate Brian Howell out there. You are the author of the book, The Catholic Company Man. Hey, what was the inspiration for this book?
Yeah, it's just such an interesting sort of self journey, I guess. And I've been in the pharmaceutical business, Dave, for, I mean, almost 30 years. Mm-hmm. And prior to that, I was a science major. My dad's a doctor. I went to medical school for a short time. And I mean, you know, I kind of just did a lot of searching, you know? I was in a theater company for a while, traveled the world singing and dancing, and I'd never been in a production prior to joining it. I mean, I was a bit of a sort of traveling Wilbury, I guess. But everywhere I went as a cradle Catholic, and as hard as I tried to wander off or get distracted or party and act stupid as a kid, I was always pulled back by just strange experiences, very divine experiences. And I got to the point, frankly, during the pandemic, when I had a lot of time, I've always written things down at the end of business trips. I'll be on an airplane coming home at night, and if something wild happened or something divine, I'll just write it down. So I had bits and parts and pieces of this book for 20 years. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to finish it. And so I put it together, and I got an editor to help me get it right. And then I shopped it unsuccessfully through almost 24 publishers, and finally got picked up by a small publisher in Oregon. And it's been quite a journey, frankly, self-reflective, in that it's my Catholic corporate story, being at meetings, being in the bar late at night, getting up, doing Ash Wednesday at company meetings. And I mean, trying to do Lent while traveling. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Trying to find a daily mass once in a while, things that have happened to me, divine conversations with people that can only be angels, you know, I just wrote it all down. So here it is.
I got to be honest with you. I get so many books sent to me, and I have not read this yet, but it is like next on my list of books to read. But some of the titles in here are really, 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 really interesting. Like something about fighting the lizard or something like that. Day One and the Dilemma. There's a lot of great titles in here, but they're short little stories, right? It's nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me give you one. So when I was 23, mm-hmm. 24, I mean, I'm 55 years old, so that's a long time ago, but I was in this theater company. We were in Australia. There was 120 of us, 18 to 22 years old, from a dozen countries. And our last show was canceled. But the plane tickets to come back to the States weren't for another 2 weeks or something. So they just said, be at the airport in 2 weeks. Well, you can imagine what a bunch of 20-somethings are going to do in Australia, right? So we got a condo, a bunch of my buddies and I got a condo on Manly Beach outside of Sydney. And we decided we were going to drink 500 beers in 4 days. Now, there were a lot of us. It sounds like a big number, but still, we had a scoreboard and the whole thing was stupid. Well, Sunday morning rolled around. And I'd had enough. Yeah, I was just miserable. So I thought, I'm going to go jogging. So I threw my ball cap on and hadn't showered or shaved or anything and went jogging. And I was in this neighborhood in Manly, outside of Sydney, this neighborhood called Manly. And there's church bells. I'm hearing these church bells. So I kept jogging, and I pretty soon found myself on what I thought was a campus of like a school or something, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of brick buildings, look like a school. And church bells are going, and I was at the corner of a big brick building. I jogged around the corner and I ran full speed into a kid my age in his cassock. I mean, ran into him. Bam! And obviously the kid's Catholic because he's in a cassock. He's going somewhere. Yep. Well, it turned out to be a seminary. And I said, well, I'll come back. When's Mass this evening? Now, granted, I've probably had, I'm hungover and not showered and the whole thing. And he's like, no, come with me. Grabs me by the arm, pulls me in the side door of this little chapel. It's a seminary. And there's 12 guys in there having morning Mass with the seminary director, whoever it was. And I was probably one or two civilians, maybe. It was there, morning Mass.
Wow.
And I never felt so out of place in my life, my friend. Because this kid's my age. These other 10 guys are my age. And the contrast of what they're doing with their life and what I'm doing with my life could not be any more clear.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Could not be any more clear. And it was that, really, that was kind of one of the first stories I wrote down. That was almost 30 years ago. But it also was the moment where I just flat out knew that this God, this faith of mine was never going to let me go. I was not going to be able to break free of this deal,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so there we were kind of wasting a lot of time as young and stupid people, but I had this really divine reminder of faith. And, the end of that story is here when I was finishing up the book, I thought, I wonder if I could find that person I ran into.
Mm-hmm.
I did some searching on the internet and sent a bunch of emails. And sure enough, I get this email back from Father Danny Meager in Sydney. Well, he's Bishop Danny Meager now.
Wow.
And he was there. Now, he doesn't remember me per se or that moment, but he said that was my seminary. And he explained the whole thing. It was probably 12 guys, probably their morning Sunday. Now, that seminary has been closed and they've moved everything operationally to Melbourne. But he got back to me. And we've been in correspondence. He's like, I don't think I was there, but I know people who were there, and that was my era. So, and here's these guys, doing something with their life, and I'm doing what? Like, come on. Anyway, it was a great starting point for what would be a long journey back to the faith.
So you think that was your first step back to your faith?
Yeah, I mean, that was the first real sort of lightning bolt, you know? I mean, I was a cradle Catholic, good parents, always wanted us in church and whatnot. And I went to a Catholic university. We went to Mass every Sunday, regardless of what happened on Saturday night, which could be argued good and bad theologically, but I never really left, but I was far from serious.
Yeah.
And far from self-accountable. That was the first real moment when something like really hit me about what I was doing with my life versus other faithful young men were doing it that were my contemporaries, right?
Are you a native Idahoan?
Washington State, about 2 hours west of here.
Okay, so you're in the northern part of up towards Canada, right? Moscow?
Yep, Panhandle, yep.
Okay. So how hard was it for you to begin to take your faith seriously?
Well, it's like anything else. Once you start, you get married and start having kids, a lot of us are kind of pulled back, to the more serious things in life.
Yeah.
The question, how difficult, it wasn't as much difficult as it was just sort of getting rightly ordered again. And that's why I talk about in the book about this on-ramp idea. When I finally started waking up, Dave, when I started finally waking up, I wasn't ready to read Augustine or Aquinas. I needed something basic. I mean, I didn't even know what the catechism was until 5 years ago.
Wow.
Much less have a knowledge of it,
Yep.
So, because, back in those days, there just wasn't that much of, real depth of catechesis, right?
Sure.
So I kind of came back with my wife. My wife grew up Lutheran, and we were married in the Lutheran church. The marriage was then subsequently blessed in the Catholic church later.
Yep.
I had no idea about the differences or anything. My wife went through RCIA after we had our second or third. We have four girls. Second, maybe? 12 years after we got married. And, her study pulled me into study kind of thing, which is not unusual, right?
No.
It's the convert that pulls the cradle back to the faith.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we just more and more and more became more and more serious about what this faith was. And then to me, the ultimate question was, if it's real, it's everything. If it's not, then why don't I just watch football? Like, there's no middle ground in this deal. Once you realize that, right, yeah, once you realize the magnitude of and historical significance of this, there was this guy, Jesus, there were the Romans, there were the Jews, they were at odds with him. They crucified him after a short time. He had no venture capital, no startup, no organization behind him. The most powerful forces at work were against him. Mm-hmm. And they snuffed him out in a couple of years in a backwater town in during Roman times, and we're still talking about him. Like, once I got to that point, then I was hooked, and I was just hooked.
So what was it you were looking for at that point in your life?
Oh boy, I don't know, peace, financial security.
Yeah,
I mean all the things, right?
Sure.
I think a lot, that's a great question. I think at that point in my life, what I wanted to know how to be the right kind of father and the right kind of husband and how to raise my children properly. Because I knew at that point they were a gift from the Almighty, and ultimately he was going to use them for his good. Whether or not I could really articulate that, I knew it. Mm-hmm. And I knew I had to raise them correctly. So that was a lot of it.
So on your journey back, what was your first, and I know that we don't always grasp at the first thing that we should be learning, but what was it that was the first thing that you learned that really stuck with you? What was that on-ramp for you?
Two things. Great question. Two things. One is the Didache. You know, the early document that sort of lines out the mass that may or may not have been written, 70, 80 AD,
yep.
Maybe latest 100 AD. Like somebody that interacted with somebody who knew the apostles and or knew Jesus directly effectively lined out what it is that we do on Sunday back then. That was big for me. Mm-hmm. To have that historical anchor all the way back. Mm-hmm. Once I learned and really started understanding apostolic succession all the way back to Peter and 266 popes, you know, again, I want to know I'm part of something that's bigger than me. All the analysis has been done. I don't have to do any of it myself. Not as a slacker, but if we're going to make deep theological decisions, I want to know that somebody smarter than me that went through it first. Like, for example, if I'm going to be an engineer and build a bridge, I'm not going to do it without the engineering expertise that came before me so that bridge don't fall down. Mm. Right? So for me, these things that really galvanized my faith were the Didache, because I knew the mass was that ancient. Mm-hmm. Apostolic succession, which told me it was unbroken. And it kind of went from there, really, curiosity-wise.
So now your book is about balancing family and work and, you know, the corporate environment. How did you start to do that?
How did I start to balance?
Yeah, how did you balance that? I mean, how are you a witness to your faith at work, to your family, and, you know, as a man?
I kind of write about that. I mean, I wasn't for a long time. I was kind of a Jekyll and Hyde. You wear two different suits. You go to work.
Yeah.
And you got to remember, I was in sales and marketing, and you go to a big conference. Everything happens in the bar at night. After work's over, mm-hmm. The people that want to get promoted are talking to you, and you want to get promoted. So you're talking to your leaders, and all the political alignment and all that stuff happens. And that's when, you know, these people drink too much and all the filthy jokes start coming out and all the things that happen after dark, you know?
Right.
And you kind of live, I wouldn't say I lived a double life, but I certainly lived in two different vocabularies. Right.
Yeah. I had that problem this week.
Yeah. And so I think, what am I trying to say? I wouldn't say there was a lot of balance at all. It was just two different, you lived in two different worlds. You, mm-hmm. You were home with your family, and you know, I had a rule. I'd get done in my office by four or five on a Friday, and I wouldn't pick anything up, the phone or nothing, until after Mass on Sunday. So I, you know, I could do things on the weekend that could control mm-hmm. and help the family time. But when we were on the road, I mean, you were on the road, and you were out and you were following the lead of everybody else. And it just took a long time to get to the point where I would just not participate anymore.
Just go back to your room.
Yeah. You either go back to your room or instead of having, five beers at 10 o'clock at night, you have a glass of wine at dinner and that's it. You go back to your room,
Yep.
But the question is, who wants to talk to you when and what important topics have to happen after the meeting, right? The meeting after the meeting is what drives a lot of corporate action.
Deacon Dave, you've been in the corporate world a lot. Do you have any questions for Eric?
Well, I can relate to these, business trips and did a lot of that. For me at that time, though, it was mostly before my reversion or enlightenment is probably better, because I'm a cradle Catholic also. So it didn't bother me as much at that time because I didn't, my faith wasn't that strong at that time. So I'm talking about myself. I'm not sure I have a question, Dave. What tell us another story about your, things that happened and on your, say, your business travels. You have another story you might want?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, sure. So, I can give you one. There was a Lent along the way where I decided I was going to go to daily Mass at least once during the week, including on the road. So now granted, as a third year diaconate candidate, as you know, they introduced the divine office to us early, right? Morning and evening prayers, the divine office, which have really become, a part of my wife Heather and I's daily routine. We've come to love it,
Mm-hmm.
Back then I had no idea what the divine office was, like no idea. Liturgy of the hours, no idea. So keep that in mind. So I flew to Billings, Montana, dead of winter, freezing cold, early Lent. And I had to go, I don't know, maybe over to Gillette, Wyoming or something, long day, a couple hundred miles one way for sales calls. So I got up and I walked over to the cathedral in Billings for morning Mass. I mean, it's dark. It's like 6 a.m, nobody around. Mm-hmm. And the place is locked up. And I had checked at the concierge and they had said, well, yeah, there's a Mass in the morning and this is what time it's at. Well, evidently they were wrong. So I'm standing out there in the dark and this woman walks up literally out of nowhere. Now, maybe I'm dramatizing it, but literally out of nowhere, this old lady walks up and she says, what are you doing? I said, well, I was going to go to Mass, but evidently I'm not going to Mass because there's no Mass. She says, well, come with me. I have these come with me moments, And we go in the side of the cathedral down in the basement, the smaller chapel, and these women, three or four of these women, probably in their 70s, are saying the morning prayers of the Liturgy of the Hours. I'd never even heard of it. No idea what it was. And so I sat there kind of in awe of this whole thing, learning as we went. And, I just couldn't believe it. It was like, these people are doing this every day. Like what, I just couldn't process it. Well, the other part was like, how do I not know about this? So lots of questions in my mind. And then we got done and this lady says, well, thank you for being here today. You were most helpful. And it sounds simple. So I walked across town and there was no Mass and I prayed with some old ladies, big deal. But this lady says, well, I need to thank you for assisting today. And I'm thinking, what? Like I'm nobody. She says, I've been praying for 30 years for my husband to join the church. And your voice is helpful. And we appreciate that. And I never saw this lady again. She walked off into the darkness. I walked off into the darkness. I have no idea if her husband ever converted, but that's the first time in my life that I really interacted with somebody that had that level of commitment to prayer or something for decades that she was not getting an answer on. And she's thanking me. She's thanking me for participating and assisting. I mean, those are the kind of things that I think some of us in that sort of cradle spot that aren't ready for Aquinas can hear through these stories. Like there's these divine moments. If you just listen when you're on the road and you're working, there's these tiny little things that can be very powerful if you just sort of listen to them and let them play out. You know, I could have easily walked back to my hotel and gotten a cup of coffee and gotten on the road. But this woman said, come with me. And I went, well, I'm still talking about it. Like these little things can be very divine, you know? Mm. So that's it. I wrote that up in there. But what a way to get introduced to the Liturgy of the Hours. You never even heard of it. I'm 35 years old in the middle of the night in Billings, Montana. I mean,
you've traveled,
I love that kind of stuff.
You've traveled the world to come to your faith, haven't you?
Yeah. You know, talk about traveling the world. The story that's not in this book that will be hopefully in the second book if I get to that. I was just in the fall, I was in Dublin. Mm. And I was in Dublin on All Saints.
Oh, wow.
So I get up in the morning and I walk, I told my colleagues, I'm like, I'm not going to any meetings. I'm going to Mass in Ireland. I'm going to Mass on All Saints Day. So I walk up to this Mass and I'll never forget this. It's St. Lawrence O'Toole, which is the patron saint of Ireland, I guess, outside of St. Patrick. That's the name of the parish. And there's probably 10 80-year-olds in there and me. So the state of the Irish church is a little different than we might remember. And I walk in and I'm sitting, kneeling, praying. And this gentleman walks up to me and he's got this voice, this perfect Irish voice, like the Lucky Charms guy or something, you know, he's got the hat on, just like right out of an Irish pub, this old guy. And he says, his name was John. And he says, well, will you come back and ring the bells with me? Oh, laddie, will you come ring the bells with me? You know, I'm like, all right, well. So we go in the back and the bells are 90 feet up in the belfry, but the rope comes all the way down into the narthex, right? And I don't think this guy can do it. He can't pull it. So I'm pulling on this rope and it's lifting me off the ground and ding, bang. So I'm ringing the bells on All Saints Day in Dublin in this old neighborhood. Okay. So awesome. Oh, it's awesome. So then I went to Mass and literally before the Mass starts, this John guy interrupts the priest. Oh, Father, what was that guy's name? Father Brendan. Father Brendan, you got to meet Eric. Oh, he's from the U.S. Oh, yeah, we can't have Mass unless we say hello. So this guy's talking to me from the altar. And I'm saying, no, just adjudicate the Mass. Don't talk to me during Mass, you know. It was awesome. So then afterwards, he says, let's ring the bell again. So I went back and rang it again, you know, and you know, I don't even, does it even matter? It's just such a great moment. You know, none of that stuff happens unless you get out of your hotel room when you're on these trips and you walk up the street and you go to daily Mass once in a while, or you duck in when somebody invites you, you know, these little things happen that are so divine.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
You have kind of a patron saint, don't you? Somebody that's really important. Who is that?
I was going to say my actual patron saint for my confirmation is Saint Martin. And I'm thinking, how in the world would you know that? But my saint that I really identify with is Saint Thomas More.
Right.
That's the Englishman. He was Henry VIII's right-hand man, if you recall, and then he was beheaded at the Tower of London.
Mm-hmm.
Because he wouldn't sign the act of supremacy, aligning himself with the Anglican Church, effectively making the king the Pope, right? And St. Thomas More has this famous quote that the king's good servant, but God's first. The king's good servant, but God's first. Supposedly those were his last words. Mm. I was the king's good servant, but God's first. And I mean, if we could all live that way,
right?
You know?
Right. But you had a special you had a special moment, didn't you?
Yeah, we were in.
I listened to your show on Salt and Light, so I know a little bit about the story.
Oh.
But it's really something I want to share with the audience. So
yeah, no, I'm happy to. So we went to London. Our parish priest at St. Augustine's at Moscow, Father Chase Hasenroll, is getting his PhD at Oxford in divinity, and I don't know, maybe he'll be bishop someday or something. I don't know, but young guy, very dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going to take a Thanksgiving trip anyway. So we decided to go to Iceland and then to London and see him and then go to Oxford, see him, and then go on to London. So we went and saw Father Chase. And my sophomore in high school, Elizabeth, was adamant. She's like, we have to go to the Tower of London. We have to go to the Tower of London. And I'm thinking, like, of all the places, like, really? But she had learned about it in, you know, ninth grade church history or something. So we went, and the tour guides at the Tower of London are what they call beefeaters. They dress like the guys in the gin bottle, the front of the beefeater's gin bottle. And a beefeater in England is somebody who's highly decorated on a military basis, retired with honors, and they can live at the Tower of London. They house them there, and they are the tour guides. So these are really knowledgeable, very British, you know, culturally astute guys. Mm-hmm. So we go through the tour, and at the end, I said, well, where was St. Thomas More beheaded? And they said, ah, you know, we think it's kind of right here in the square and this and that. And I said, well, I'm in third year in the Catholic diaconate program, and he's kind of a special guy to me. And he goes, oh, well, come with us. So
everybody's telling you to come with them, right?
Yeah, I'm telling you, it's crazy. He says, well, come along. So me and my wife and my daughters, we walk into the chapel. There's a little chapel in the middle of the Tower of London where the wives who were beheaded are buried. Anne Boleyn is buried right below the altar. The wives are buried in the crypt below the altar. Mm. And there's typical sort of, you know, European thing where there's all these, like, you know, sort of velvet ropes that kind of keep you in the museum line, right?
Right.
And this guy says, come with us. And he just unclips the rope. And we go on the other side, the forbidden side of the rope, to a door that has no label on it. And we go in this door and down the stairs, and we're in the crypt below the chapel in the Tower of London. Like, nobody else, no tourists are going in this place.
Wow.
And he says, well, right there in the wall is St. Thomas More. So it was where St. Thomas More is buried. Mm. It was incredible. It was incredible. And so I was telling him the story, like, this, you know, the king's good servant, but God's first. And how that's a big deal to us Catholics. And took us through the whole story of how, you know, why he was buried there. There's two crypts, and he, you know, there's a big crypt that says St. Thomas More on it.
Yeah.
They theorize that he's actually in the wall, like 3 or 4 feet moved over, but they needed a place to put the memorial. So he's not actually where the memorial is. He's in the wall.
Wow.
But we, again, come with me. Come with me. It was great. It was great.
Eric, how did that lead to you joining the diaconate?
That's, you know, Dave, I probably inquired about the diaconate, I don't know, 5 or 6 times over 10 years, right, and never got any response at all, none, mm-hmm, from multiple dioceses. My feeling and position on the diaconate was, and still is that if the church needs help, I'm willing to do it. And I know, and I'm sure Deacon Dave knows far better than I, but there's so much work to be done. And if we can help, you know, baptize, marry, adjudicate funerals, visit the sick, just do the work that can be done, but still needs ordained hands, I'm willing to do it. I constantly feel like I'm unworthy constantly, but they have kept me in the program, and I keep trying to, you know, get better and study. And I just think there's so much work to be done. And I always sort of sense that, but, I don't know if I don't even know the answer to that question. I got a call from Father Chase one day, and he said, okay, you're in and you're going. And I had asked, when we moved to Moscow, Idaho, I had asked him about it. We had a beer one night, and I had asked him about it. And he said, well, he said, if something's on your mind for 10 years or more, you should probably take it seriously. And I said, well, that's great, but nobody's responding to me. Like, I don't get any response. So there's either enough deacons, or I'm sending my inquiries to the wrong place. Like, what's going on? And about a year later, he came back and said, no, you're in. Let's go. So that was it.
That's cool.
So far, so good.
Deacon Dave, you had sort of the same kind of experience with that, but you kind of pushed that away because people were telling you you'd be a good deacon, but you were kind of,
Yeah, well, I had one, you know, my story about my call is I had a parishioner that, you know, we were co-parishioners of parishioners together. And after Mass one day, she comes up to me and says, you would make a good deacon. And, you know, I kind of as Dave was alluding, I brushed that off. I didn't really respond to it. But when my spiritual director, Father Ron, said basically the same thing, you'd make a good deacon and you should consider this a call to be a deacon. That's when I took it serious. But I had a relatively similar. So once I, you know, prayed about it a little bit and I said, yeah, I want to pursue this. I wasn't getting response from the diocese and whatnot. And as it turns out, since when that happened, probably was good 10 years ago, maybe more, there was been only one class of deacons is in our diocese since then. So, and that's the class I was in. And I was ordained when I was 65 years old, which was, you know, their rule. I'm not sure if that's a in general rule, but certainly, you know, you don't want to be. That's all. You only have 10 good years of service, and then you're technically supposed to retire at 75. So anyway, it was really my last chance. You know, just everything lined up. So it's a wonderful thing, though. I'm enjoying it. Service, that's exactly what you said is, you know, there's plenty of need for service, and that's what I want to do. I want to serve our parish, the church, the people, the community. Did you have some kind of a call, you know, or did it just kind of, was it an internal thing?
Well, I mean, I've had two or three people tell me that, you know, that oddly, my dad, he sort of jokes, he calls me the deacon, and I sort of passed it off, and he's not, I mean, he's a good churchgoer, but he's not the kind of guy that would seek out that, you know, for me. He calls me the deacon kind of jokingly. That's kind of when I started thinking about it, actually. But I always thought that, frankly, I think it was internal. To answer your question, I think it was internal. And I think that the more I'm into it and the more thought and discernment and prayer I give to it, and my wife and I continue to do the liturgy of the hours daily, morning and evening prayers together all the time, it just kind of come to this conclusion that there's an element of humility to it that really drives it. And if you're just willing to say, okay, I'll do what you need me to do at whatever pace you want me to do it, and it ordain me if it's your will, kind of takes the pressure off, right? Mm. I mean, I spent my whole career trying to climb the stupid ladder. Mm. For what? I'm not minimizing that. You need good, faithful people. Like, imagine if Enron was loaded with faithful people. It might not have been such a disaster, right? Mm.
True.
I'm not minimizing the climbing the ladder corporate-wise, but in this particular case, it's sort of the opposite. You got to kind of surrender and just go, okay, I'm just going to go at whatever pace this thing takes me. Because there's guys in my cohort that are doing way more active things, for example, during Mass. Whereas I'm at a campus, we're at Newman Center, St. Augustine's at University of Idaho. A lot of that stuff, a lot of the sort of daily routine, serving Mass, lecturing, that kind of stuff, the students are doing that. And they should be, because they're at that young part of their lives, and this is their parish. Mm-hmm. So I don't have as much work kind of that's visible, if that makes sense. I will, I'm sure, over time. But again, you got to kind of just let it grow as the Almighty's going to do it. And that's just not the way the corporate world works. You got to be motivated and be knocking people over and climbing. And, you know, it's been a bit of a shift in the way I approach things.
I'm just curious, what stage are you at? You know, are you technically a candidate, or are you to the lector stage?
I'm in the lector stage, next year's acolyte stage, and then we're ordained. So I'm finishing up the third of my 4 years.
Right. Okay. Oh, finish up your third of 4 years?
Only yeah, we
4
go
years of formation?
We go four, yeah.
Okay. We did five, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Eric, help me to understand that paradigm shift of, instead of climbing the corporate ladder, just letting things go and understanding that God is in charge. Because sometimes I have a problem with that. You know, sometimes I have a problem saying, I know what I got to do, but how do I let go and let God?
I think you take a deep breath and you let 24 hours pass before you make any major decisions. Because 99% of the time, whatever God's going to do, it's going to become pretty clear.
Yeah.
And where I get screwed up is when I kind of get into the rat race and go too fast and get out ahead of our skis, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time when we settle down and just let things kind of percolate and resolve, it all becomes clear what to do.
Yeah.
You know?
You know, for a guy that didn't even know that the catechism existed, you do a really, really nice job on Salt and Light with your minute with the catechism, and then your show is very based in catechesis. Where would you suggest somebody that wants to study the catechism? Is there a good way for them to start? Is there a good place to start?
Yeah, I think there is. Now, I would love for everybody to read my book, but let's put that aside as like a nice to have.
Yeah.
I think you do two things. And this is, I'm coming from the perspective of cradle Catholic, so you have some knowledge.
Right.
Right? If you're coming from zero, it might be a little bit different situation. Let's say you grew up Catholic, you weren't all that catechized, you kind of went to Mass, you know, got confirmed, don't really know why. Right? What's all the fuss about? I would get a copy of Bill O'Reilly's book, Killing Jesus.
Really?
It's not a religious book per se, but him and Martin Dugard, who wrote it, they're Catholic.
Yeah.
But that's where I'd go first, because it is a brilliant, in my opinion, short write-up of what was happening historically at the time, what the Romans were doing, what the Jews were doing, what Judea meant, and what sort of the fact that Jerusalem was this sort of political outpost, and what Pilate was doing, trying to climb through the ranks. So there were political motivations, what it was like to have a rabble-rousing sort of band of brothers with literally no pavement, no showers, no cell phones, no deodorant, no. I mean, it sets the stage of what ultimately became the crucifixion and why this is historically accurate. And it's very well done. So that's the first thing I would do, is read that. Second thing I would do is, this is my opinion, but I think this is a good way to go about it. Get a copy of Trent Horn's book, Why We're Catholic. Are you familiar with that book?
I've heard of it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very simple, a couple hundred pages, Trent's from Catholic Answers. They do a good job of laying out the nuts and bolts of what we believe.
Mm-hmm.
So you get the historical perspective from O'Reilly, you get the Trent Horn bit. And then just get a copy of the catechism and you start. This is the way I learned. Some people like to read books cover to cover and they can absorb it all. I can't do that. I'm kind of an on the job training sort of guy. But if I have a question, I go to the catechism, I look it up. I always go there with a question in mind because I'm looking for an answer. And it's very, you know how the catechism works. Every paragraph has a number to it.
Right.
Right. Every section has a heading to it, right? It's very well organized. So you can ask a particular question and go to the index and go, I need to know something about purgatory. And boom, it'll take you straight there. And you can get answers to things you're looking to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the on-ramp, right?
Right?
So you get the historical perspective, you get the nuts and bolts from Trent Horn, and then you start asking and answering questions that you're trying to tackle in the catechism. And then if you want to speak Latin and go into the ancient documents, go for it. But you know what I mean? It gets pretty deep at that point, which is fine, but you can't start there. You got to really learn the basis of what was happening at the time in the first century, and then go back through and kind of work your way to it, in my opinion.
Now, you're working with the University of Idaho.
Well, I mean, I have a day job, but yeah, our campus church, our Newman Center, St. Augustine's, is literally straight across the street from the bookstore, and straight across the street from the admissions office. We're right on campus.
And you're doing a lot of work with that organization, right?
Yeah. Last weekend I had a wood splitter out, and I was splitting a spruce tree that came down in the back. So I do a lot of everything.
But I mean, you're involved with like working with the young people.
Yeah, we teach religious ed. I do a bunch of media for them. There's a coffee shop. My wife runs the office. Mm-hmm. We kind of do a lot of roll up your sleeves, kind of take the garbage out and keep the place running and the lights on. Mm-hmm. There's a whole bunch of the football team that's there. The University of Idaho football team, our coach, Jason Eck, is a Catholic. And there's been a bit of a revival in the football team. I think 8 or 9 guys came in at the Easter Vigil, football players.
Wow.
And so there's a lot going on. I can't claim much of that but I know the guys.
Yep.
And we're mostly around a lot, kind of in that helpful sort of behind the scenes mode, but there's a lot going on. The focus missionaries are there. We have a campus minister. You know, we kind of let the young people talk to the young people as much as possible.
Sure. Yeah. You've got quite an LDS, Latter-day Saints, the Mormons population in Idaho. How is it to catechize the LDS?
I haven't really had too much of that, really. That's more southern Idaho. Up here we have more. There's a really big Calvinist group up here called Christ Church. Okay. And they have a national organization. They're very, very, very strong up here. And oddly, we get along with them pretty well because they're very serious about their faith.
Yep.
We're serious about our faith. And we kind of find common ground, even though they don't particularly align with the Pope or Mary, but we get along otherwise.
Right.
But LDS, that's a good question. I have not had a lot of interaction with kind of the LDS evangelization up here.
Yeah, I did not know that there was a big LDS population out in Idaho until I had met
Southern Idaho, big time.
Until I met Pat King, who's given me a complete lesson on Idaho, and I know probably more than I ever thought I would know about Idaho, which is a beautiful state. Want to get out there one of these days. Eric, take somebody who's just right now is saying, wants to get on this on-ramp. Give them some advice on getting them onto the highway.
Yeah, I don't know. If you're like me and you're married and you're raising kids, the first thing is to be present. You know, don't let mom take them to the, I'm talking to men, right? Don't let mom take them to mass. Because the data is very clear. The husband, the dad who is active in faith, the stats are that the whole family will remain faithful. Now, is that perfect in every family? No. Do kids run off and question for a while? Certainly. But the statistics are that good, solid leadership from the man helps. So the first thing is, I think, you know, get off the sidelines and join your family. Hmm. And the second thing, I think, is kind of where the book, the tail end of the book has an appendix about kind of like, what are the 3 or 4 things you got to really know, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you really got to know what the church says about its establishment, that Christ established the church by handing off the keys to Peter. You got to know that, right?
Right.
You got to know why the Mass matters, what we believe about the Didache, the ancient elements of it, the transubstantiation, right? I mean, we've been at this for a long time. And you got to know what they meant in John 6. Unless you eat of my flesh, drink of my blood, you shall not have life within you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you got to know that when you really read and digest the 6th chapter of John, it ends with a whole bunch of people leaving because they didn't understand it. And Christ let them go. Now, we all know that. The 3 of us know that.
Right.
But if you're a cradle Catholic that's not really sure why, what all the fuss is about, you really sit and think about the 6th chapter of John and why Christ told this story 3 times. And if it was just a story and everybody left, he didn't say, hold on, let me tell it another way so you understand. No, Unless you eat of my flesh and drink of my blood, you shall not have life within you. And if you don't get it, you're welcome to go. I think that gets, you know, a couple of those things can help somebody get kind of shifting from that sort of motion Catholic thing, just going through the motions, to thinking like, oh, wait a minute. This is a big deal.
Right.
And once you get to the big deal part, then you can do all of the other things we talked about. You know, read the O'Reilly book. Go to Trent Horn stuff. Get involved in Catholic Answers. Get yourself a copy of the Catechism. But you want to start somewhere? Go to Mass, watch all the elements, and really, really think about what is all the fuss about. And then read the sixth chapter of John, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe that element of the Gospel of Matthew where Christ hands the keys to Peter. Like, none of this stuff was by accident. Why in the world would you start it, go through the trouble of starting an organization on earth, allowing yourself to be crucified, and leaving no organization or no plan afterwards?
Mm-hmm.
Why would he do that? He knew our humanity better than we do. So that's why he handed it off to Peter. So those are the kind of things for me that really made me go, wait a minute, this is either just pomp and circumstance, or this is absolutely everything. It's bigger than life. You know?
Yeah. No, I understand. And one of the things that I'd like to ask you before we let you go, how can we, as Catholics that have been on our journey along the way, longer than some of these people that are just coming, how can we assist them and not pressure them into becoming where we are overnight? Because you can't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going through that. Yeah. There's a real skill, corporate skill in listening, right? And there's a real human skill in listening. I've been through every kind of management training you can think of, with every sort of color and bells and whistles and famous author and famous football coach. I've been through, you know, Lou Holtz and John Maxwell and Malcolm Gladwell. You name it, right? Yeah. But at the end of the day, if you can listen more than you talk, things happen generally. Most of the time, I think people just want to be comfortable. They first just want to be comfortable. Like if you get a sense somebody wants to join Mass, just invite them to Mass and sit with them. Don't just hope they show up. Sit with them. And then help them understand the standing and the kneel. Because it's awkward, right? If you don't know when to stand and kneel. I served Mass yesterday. One of the first times I've served as a deacon. And I'd never been so nervous. Not a deacon, deacon candidate. But I was, you know, he had me prep the altar. And like, geez, if I would have messed that up. So folks that are willing to come in, you got to kind of sit with them. Don't say anything to them. Just sit with them. Just go through it with them. And I had a guy, there's a gentleman in our church who's his wife and his daughter have converted. He's Protestant. He hasn't come yet, but this is kind of where I'm going with this. He says, we had coffee the other day and I was asking him kind of what he's doing, where he's at. Is he coming over? You know? And he just said, you know, I come to Mass every weekend now. We don't go to the Protestant church anymore. And I watch guys like you. He goes, and I know where he sits. He sits, we're in kind of a round sort of half circle church. He sits on the other side. And he goes, I watch guys like you and I watch how serious you are taking this. And I thought about that. Like, maybe we don't need to say anything, that we just need to be with them and show them that there are moments that are very sacred that we attend to, and then answer the questions after that. Maybe. Everybody's different, right?
Yeah, no, but it makes a lot of sense. A lot of sense. Have a coffee with somebody. Be their friend.
Yeah.
Be the friend first.
Chances are they're watching us anyway.
Yeah, that's true, man. Eric, I really appreciate you coming here. And finally, third time is a charm, and it was worth the wait. Because let's stay in touch, because I love the work that you do with Salt and Light. Deacon Dave, would you mind taking us out with a prayer and a blessing?
Well, sure. In the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit, amen. Father in heaven, thank you so much for this wonderful podcast along the way. Our great guest this evening, Eric Meyer. And of course, we thank you for our host, Dave Horton, down the hall, Dave. And the Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
With your spirit.
May the blessing of Almighty Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit come down on you and remain with you forever. Amen.
Amen.
Go in peace.
So for my guest, sure. Eric Meyer, my producer, Deacon Dave Imhoff, I'm down the hall, Dave, always praying that your troubles be less, your blessings be more, and nothing but happiness come through your door. We'll see you next time.